Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I am joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We are both writers, editors, and reporters for ArizonaSports.com. All right, Kevin, you woke up this morning, checking your phone maybe, seeing if Anthony Davis got traded, whatever. Need to wash yourself down and get ready for the day. Did you take a long shower? Was it like a decently timed shower, a short shower? I'm usually like somewhere in the middle.
It was one of those days because this week is just slow where I like get into the office and I'm like, I need to take a very dirty shower. And that dirty shower is talking more about the Suns point guards and relating it to the Anthony Davis stuff and making guesses how things will go 10 steps down the road, and they're probably going to go completely different. But here we are today.
If you have no idea what that inside joke was, the Suns had a not confirmed players meeting, but seemed like a players meeting after they lost by 37 at Denver. Deceiving 37-point loss, in my opinion. Suns are on a back-to-back. They're in Denver. They're only down about 10-15 in the fourth quarter. And then Denver remembered, oh, yeah, you guys beat us, and we're going to make sure you guys know that we remembered that. So they, the reporters who were there, Gina Mazzell of The Athletic, Dwayne Rankin of The Republic, they were in the locker room, and then they were told to leave the locker room, and then they spent almost an hour waiting, and then they came back in, and when they asked everyone, yo, what happened? They were like, we all took some long showers. It was great. So if they're going to make jokes about it, I'm going to make jokes about it. Because how else do you...
Hey, this is going better than disclosing everything that was said and sources leaking. And I'm sure if Woj wasn't dealing with like Anthony Davis stuff and he was bored this week, he might like give somebody a call in that locker room and be like, so did someone yell at anyone? Did someone throw soup? Stuff like that. But hey... We're rolling and everything looks just fine. Everything's fine.
If dumb organizations want to do dumb organization things, now is the perfect time to do so with the Anthony Davis thing going on, and probably it's going to continue going on for
just
quite a while.
No arrests because police reports come out later. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's true. Make it count now. I just wanted to bring up briefly the basketball, since we kind of should before we talk point guards and look at the draft just a little bit, I guess. Suns have lost 15 of 17 since they won 5 of 7. Been quite the collapse. There was a couple close losses in there. The Charlotte game at home, the Toronto game, of course, where Siakam scored at the buzzer. They've had a couple of other games that they were in, but you add up all those games that you wind up losing, and now you're just bombarded with injuries. We're recording this on Tuesday afternoon. DeAndre Ayton is out tonight against the Spurs. We already know that Melton and Warren are pretty much expected to be out until the All-Star break, and there's 7 games left until the All-Star break. So this is probably going to be one of those stretches where they lose 22 of 25 or something like that. It's going to get really rough, and they just had the worst possible time for them to have injuries right now because they were already on a downward skid.
Yeah, there's that.
There's nothing really to talk about. They're a very...
I don't like judging this team right now, yeah.
No, it's not fair to judge them because they're one of the least talented teams in the league already, and then when you take away 3 of their 6 most important players... half of them, then they are going to look like this, especially with how much they rely on Warren and Ayton specifically for scoring. That Laker game in LA, the offense, you could see how much they really missed anyone else really to be in that spot. Okay, we're not going to talk about that though, because it's not really important to talk about. And not saying that talking about the point guards is important necessarily, but it's always relevant, at least, while this team's current roster construction sits like it has right now without a point guard. The big news this week, Anthony Davis requested a trade, which is not something that typically happens in the fashion it did. It just kind of seemed like he asked for a trade, and now there's reports that it sure sounds like there's some collusion going on between the Lakers and Davis. But what that means is Jrue Holiday, and there, to be clear, there has been nothing that has been reported that they are looking to trade Holiday. I think it's more so that they're entertaining offers now, And the big thing was Holiday said 90% of the reason that he stayed in New Orleans was because of Anthony Davis. So if he gets traded, you can assume Holiday wants out. Lonzo Ball is also involved in this because he is assumed to be a part of an Anthony Davis trade for the Lakers if that actually happens. I think there's we can go a little bit deeper on that and say it's not a sure thing that there's a trade involving the Lakers and the Pelicans involving Anthony Davis and involving Lonzo Ball, which is the whole part of this in the first place. If that were to happen, Lonzo said he does not want to go to the Pelicans where they would have, but are they going to still have Jrue Holiday? Like, there's a lot of different things down here, but he wants to go somewhere where there's not an established point guard. Of course, the timeline explodes with Suns stuff because they do not have an established point guard. A lot of people have really liked Lonzo since the draft, and he's another interesting name to keep an eye on. The big four, according to our own John Gambadoro right now, to keep an eye on are Holiday, Ball, Terry Rozier, and D'Angelo Russell. What was your reaction to all of the point guard stuff that came out yesterday? And I kind of gave mine away already. I think it's just a lot of noise that's happening right now, and people are tying things together without there really being anything there. There's a lot of things that need to happen.
Yeah, and that's why I said I took a dirty shower, which it was metaphorical. I didn't literally do that. Mm-hmm. But talking about this, put the asterisk there that, yeah, a lot of things have to happen, and but it does bring up a point, which is, well, one, in Anthony Davis's situation, the Pelicans don't need to make a move right away. He's on under contract through next season. They're just trying to get a jump start on things from his end. The Pelicans can control this still. They can, and they tried to with their statement saying they're going to be patient. Now, just as long as that lingers, then these two other options that have been obvious to Suns fans and people who follow the Suns and NBA people, that'll linger. And the point there is just that no matter whether it's involving even those two guys, Jrue and Lonzo, Anthony Davis's moving is going to shift more than just like him going to LA or him going to Boston, wherever you think he might end up. There's going to be a lot of reactionary aftershocks to this. And that's why we wrote last Friday when we were just talking about Mike Conley, the Suns don't need to do something super crazy right now, but if they're going to do something like overpay, Jrue Holiday's arguably a better option than Mike Conley. And he's under contract, what, I think a year or two longer, a little less money, not a whole lot less per year than Mike Conley. It rises from like $26 million to $27 million in the last year, which is the player option. But he's 28. He's a little younger. Also has dealt with injury issues, but he's kind of that perfect fit, you could say, alongside Devin Booker, where he's actually played off the ball a whole lot in the last few years, is comfortable doing that, can defend whatever perimeter guy you need a good defender on, but can also, like, he's averaging 8 assists per game, kind of playing off the ball. So that's impressive to me. He's a great scorer too. Hasn't shot the 3-ball as well, but that's all super intriguing. That's why I think he's a good in-between between Conley and Lonzo, where Lonzo's obviously missing a huge chunk without having a jumper or a free throw or a set 3 in his arsenal, but we can get into him a little bit. But Jrue's kind of just that, still kind of young, has a few years left, assuming those injuries don't pop up. You got to commit long-term to him, but that's not a problem if you want to put stability alongside Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton.
With Conley, I would hesitate to give up a first-round pick if it was only top 1, 2, 3 protected. I would just, if I could only put top 1 protection on the Suns' first-round pick and ship it for Jrue Holiday, I would do that. He's not perfect for a fit. Any point guard who plays defense, we just say he's a perfect fit next to Devin Booker. He's not perfect, but he is a really, really good point guard.
Yeah.
He's a great defender. The thing I like about him a lot the past couple of years is his efficiency has gone up. He's shooting 48% from the field this year. He shot 49% last year, and that's on 17 and 15 shots a game. So the guy's become an efficient, high-level scorer, 19 points a game last year, 21 a game this year. The assists you mentioned, 8 assists a game this year, averaging 6.4 over his career. Three-point shooting isn't terrific, but I think that's where you can kind of rest easy and not worry about it. Rebounds as well, 4.9 a game. I think that's something they need to consider out of the point guard position as well. Not to shut down a deal necessarily, but something that the point guard here needs to do
that's
and
nice,
the guards
yeah.
need to do more in general. Best part about him is he's got 2 years after this season left on his deal, and then there is a player option for the, that would be 3 years from now, $27 million. Who knows where the cap is, if he accepts that or not. He's just about perfect for what you want from your point guard right now. Conley was, okay, he could decline his overall value a little bit, or his overall play, and that could give you trouble. But with Drew, I don't really see that becoming a thing. I think you're getting him at this level. He's entering his prime right now. I think he hit his prime last year. He had that playoff series, I believe, not last year, season, but 2 seasons ago. It might have been the Portland series last season, right?
I think that's what...
Is that what I'm thinking about?
Possibly.
Well, he just had a playoff season, either last playoffs or 2 playoffs ago, where it was clear, like, oh, Drew is, like, this is the apex of him right now. We're seeing it, and he's a terrific basketball player. A lot of people haven't seen him because he was in Philly during those weird Andre Iguodala years, and then he was in New Orleans, and they haven't really found a way out of relevance with Anthony Davis. So a lot of people aren't familiar with him, but he's a very, very good player. I think it's an argument, him and Conley, as who's better right now.
Yeah.
I think there's an argument to be made. So I think he's clearly the number one guy, and if there was anyone that has come up over the past, I would say Kristaps for the 36 hours, Phil Jackson lost his mind and then was promptly fired.
Yeah.
when they were, according to the reports at the time, they were considering trading Kristaps. That was the only other moment where, and I think you wrote about it at the time,
yeah,
where you were like, this is it.
You got to do the thing.
I don't care, whatever. That was before the injuries, but even if he was hurt now, you'd still say, like, that's a franchise big. He's already proven that he's a franchise big in this league. Just give up everything for him. Drew is just about there for me. If it takes two of the wings and that first-round pick, top one, top two protected, I would do it.
Yeah.
He is the Booker Ayton, the third guy that you would want. What do we think about Lonzo?
So, he fits. He helps. It at least presents Devin Booker, which Dan Bickley wrote about. Just, you don't want Devin Booker pulling what Anthony Davis is pulling in a few years. Lonzo helps tell Devin Booker, look, we're trying. Here's more talent next to you, a guy who compliments you to a lot of degrees. And I think Lonzo's quietly had a season where in that draft class where there are a lot of really good players, Jason Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, he was drafted behind Markelle Fultz, throw in Josh Jackson, whomever else. He's still right there with, like, maybe he ends up being the best player in this class. We don't know because he's only 21. He's good at so many things and just terrible at scoring the basketball from a shooting perspective. Like, you're shooting 45% from the free throw line. That's almost unprecedented for a guard that's not Bruce Bowen, a perimeter player that's not Bruce Bowen. And so you got to wonder, like, what does he top out as there? But still, if you're averaging like 10 points, 7 assists, 7 rebounds a game right
now.
That's
what he did last year.
Yeah. Playing pretty darn good defense. Like, I don't watch them. I haven't watched them very much for some odd reason because I guess LeBron's been hurt lately.
He's still defending well, yeah.
I think he's defending well. Like, I just posted one clip where he's literally defending the ball almost for 24 seconds off like 3 different switches, working across screens, helping, recovering, and then he goes and steals the ball, like making a read that the guy who has the ball's back is to him. Like, he's there defensively, and that's kind of what changes his upside next to Book. So if you have a great passer, he'd fit with, if you kept Josh Jackson, TJ Warren, obviously DeAndre Ayton would be helped too. So,
but with that being said, he is a work in progress. That Lakers yeah. situation with him, Kuzma, Hart, and Ingram, it's clear that there's been a opening for one of them to become the best player of the four, and it looks like Kuzma is the one that's taking it more than anyone else, and that's not a great sign. But things change when you sign LeBron James in free agency.
Yeah.
We don't have time for you to figure out your three-point shooting and your offense. We don't care that you're a great defender and an excellent passer. We need more out of you.
That's kind of his personality, though. Like, going into the draft was, he's this guy who's going to defer. If you look at his bad games, it's just like, why did you score 0 points? He probably didn't care he scored 0 points. And that might be somewhat helpful, if not frustrating, if you put him in a bigger role on, like, the Suns or something. But I think the LeVar factor could be not a big as big of a problem as we think. Yeah, like, if Robert Sarver doesn't fire James Jones, I think James Jones could handle it. James Jones being a player helps. I'm more confident in James Jones in that realm than, like, Ryan McDonough.
Can I turn you left here down an alley and introduce you
to
the Illuminati theory that I have?
Yeah.
I think LeBron James just made LaVar Ball disappear off the face of the earth.
To Lithuania, which...
LaVar didn't... When did you see LaVar on your timeline once LeBron signed? I have not seen him once on my timeline since he signed. Not once. Yeah. He's getting benched for Rajon Rondo. How is LaVar is definitely being LaVar right now. 100%. Me and you were...
Are you saying this is calculated LeBron, or like it just happens that way?
LaVar, no, LeBron Illuminati LeBron, where LeBron threw him in a locker and left him in there until... His son's either gone or LeBron's gone. I think LeVar is going to emerge from the shadows if he gets traded.
You're probably right.
Maybe I'm looking at it wrong, but I truly believe that LeBron has enough flex power in his flex to make a disgruntled dad who makes media headlines everywhere go away. Because you can say people got sick of LeVar, whatever. No, he was driving clicks like no other. That's why we saw him over and over again. Remember the CNN interview with Cuomo? Like, it was it was magical content.
It was.
And then he just went away as soon as LeBron signed. He was just gone.
Yeah.
That was I don't know what it was. Was it a Woj, Shams, Chris Haynes all in a room together with LeBron? LeBron said, or Rich Paul said, you're not covering this guy anymore. It's not happening. I don't know what, but I think that he still has to be considered in this. Not to the extent when you were drafting him, per se, but still to the extent. But I don't think it...
Does it change anything?
I don't think it ultimately changes anything, but he has to be at least brought up, and that's why I wanted to...
So Lonzo versus Drew or Mike Conley in general doesn't move the needle immediately as much as those other guys. Is that a problem if you were thinking about getting him? Does that matter? Like, he's not going to be the stabilizing force, I wouldn't think, but maybe I'm wrong.
The Suns getting Lonzo would require me having faith in them being able to spend money on a four. In the offseason, or trading for a four. Is that Aaron Gordon? Is it signing Nikola Mirotic? What exactly is it? I'm not quite sure, but I think you need another boost, another position. I don't think you can get Lonzo and say, all right, here's our five with Warren. I don't think you can do that at all. He's 21. He's going to take a while. He's shooting 31% from three, 43% from the foul line. That is not his field goal percentage. That is his free throw percentage. He's shooting 38% over his career from the field in general. I think there are some slight Rondo comparisons there, just with what you're looking at. We're going to talk about Ja Morant to close this out.
Yeah.
But Ja Morant's getting compared to Russell Westbrook by people like me just because of the style of player he is, not the direct comparison, which people take in it. You have to have a comparison for every draft prospect or anyone in general.
Just to get a baseline, here's a sculpture of what we're talking about.
Sculpture here is a great word.
Know.
I'm not saying he's the next Rondo. I'm saying you've got guys who are not score first point guards. They are pass first, pass second, pass third point guards. But looking at Rondo's stats, in his second, third, and fourth years, his shooting percentages were 49, 51, and 51. He only took 9 to 11 shots a game in that range, but he was efficient with it. Now, he wasn't shooting threes or anything, and he was still shooting 60% from the line, which I think is where Lonzo might ultimately end up. But I think that's where I worry the most, is just efficiency. Lonzo's going to have to shoot at least 43, 44% from the field. Not so concerned about the three-point shooting. Everyone talks about how he has to change his form. I was like, did you watch him at UCLA?
Yeah.
He shot 40% from three on however many attempts it was, four or five a game, and he was taking 30-footers all the time. It's a mental block or something. It's something beyond that. I think that, to wrap it on Lonzo, I think that this is actually the more logical discussion we had on Markelle Fultz, where if you can buy low on him,
yeah,
then he is a good get. But he should not be your end-all, be-all solution to the problem.
Yeah.
He's expensive, too.
Yeah, it's a different direction and plan if you're going Lonzo. Like, you got to make a plan, and so that's a different plan than going Drew or Conley, but it's very different and closer to what they're doing. Yes.
7.4 this year, 8.7 next year, $11 million team option in 2020-21 for Lonzo.
Yeah.
So you can afford that for what he is right now, but I'm just saying that he's not cheap by any means. And if you're going to say, well, I'd rather get Lonzo than pay Terry Rozier, and that has to come down to your stylistic preferences between the two players, not the money, because Lonzo's twice as cheap, but he's still not cheap.
Let's talk about, if they don't make a move this summer, or sorry, this trade deadline in a week-ish, this summer, let's talk about that. Okay. Rozier, D'Angelo Russell are probably the two, and Gambo mentioned these names. Rozier, obviously, because the Suns probably are interested in him, and he's probably not going to be re-signed unless the Celtics lose Kyrie, which is, you never know. And then you've got D'Lo, who also restricted, good friends with Devin Booker. If we're at this summer right now, where would you go between those two guys? I think I know your answer. Or would you draft Ja Morant? Let's throw him in there, because that's going to happen first, actually.
Yeah, a lot of people have been talking about Ja Morant, so I thought we should talk about him at the end. I would go D'Lo. But just because I know what I'm getting. I have no idea what I'm getting with Terry Rozier.
Yeah.
It's, if he can't, I know the Brad Stevens buzz has kind of died down the past year, but man, he's had a really, really rough year figuring it out over there. Inconsistent playing time and all that, whatever, but why is he getting inconsistent playing time with the type of player he was in the playoffs last year? You know what I mean?
Kyrie's Kyrie, and then Marcus Smart, you're getting, you know what you're getting with him. As much as he'll shoot a three in transition for no reason.
Is Terry Rozier the type of player who goes on a bad team and he can't help? Every player looks better on a good team, but is he like the ultimate guy with that, where if you stick him on a 30 to 35 win team, he's going to be garbage, but if you stick him on a 50 win team, he's actually an impact type of player? The Marcus Smart argument, if you will.
My whole thing is he like a true point guard?
Right. Yeah.
And that's why I made the Bledsoe comparison. He's pretty good defender, undersized, can shoot, showed he could score and take over games even against Eric Bledsoe, but he's not your typical, I'm going to play point guard. He's like the energy guy who's going to ebb and flow with the team. And if they're losing a lot still, I don't know how that would go. So if you're asking me between, I guess I'm asking myself between him and D'Lo. D'Lo's the same thing, but I know I'm going to get scoring. I know that Book's going to get along with him. And I know that if you pay him, then at least production-wise in the box score, you know what you're going to get already. Yeah.
D'Lo is in the same camp as Lonzo for me in a certain way, where you got to have a plan of power forward, because if you play Russell, Booker, and Ayton together, I don't care if Mikal Bridges is Kawhi Leonard times two, you're not going to have a good defense at all, and you can't. You would have to, in order to be a 45-50 win team, your offense would have to be off the charts, which it could be with those three. I'm not saying it couldn't be, but you'd have to have a plan at the four to get someone. I'm trying to think of like the type of player, a super duper Thad Young type. Maybe it is Thad Young, someone like that. D'Lo is going to be a guy to watch the rest of the season, in my opinion, because this past month has completely changed the outlook on him. He was a disappointment the first 2 years with the Lakers. A lot of that was situation. Byron Scott, shouts to you, my man. Do you remember that? Remember that season?
I try not to, I guess.
Yeah, I love D'Lo coming out of the draft, so I pay attention to it a lot more than others did, and it was a disaster. Comes to Brooklyn, and people like me are saying this is perfect. He's going to get his own team. This is exactly what he needs to kind of get out of his funk. There was way too much going on in L.A. He can just play basketball here under Kenny Atkinson, who's a good coach. Doesn't really get there in last year.
Until Spencer Dinwiddie signed his extension. Is that about when he started blowing up?
That was about when he started blowing up. In January, he is averaging 23 points and 7 assists a game. He is shooting 49% from the field. And on 8.5 attempts from 3, he is shooting 43%.
Okay.
And then if you look to the month before, he was averaging 18 points and 7 assists a game on 44 and 34 for his shooting splits, and then more of the same of those numbers. The assists have kind of gone up a bit over the course of the year. No Caris LeVert, no Spencer Dinwiddie, so he has really taken advantage of that opportunity, which is nice to see, but paying a guy on a contract year on a 3-month contract run is risky. He's only 22, but it's risky, and I love his game, and I'd have to watch a lot more of him. I haven't seen much of him this month, but yeah. I'd have to see how he's running stuff with, I think Jared Allen is healthy right now, just see how he's running two-man games, because if he can run a two-man game with Ayton, I'd feel a lot better about it, and I think he can if he can kick and make reads as a passer when he's attacking the basket, which I think you have to average that many assists a game. I'd have to see how he's looking as a playmaker, because me and you said it, you're getting the scoring. If he is the playmaker, then I'll give him his money.
Okay. I think that would be giving him his money. I'm confident in that. I don't know about the defense, but so let's go to Ja. You're not as hot on him, I don't think, as other people, right?
I think he has just been the guy. I ranked Jarrett Culver 3 for my first big board just because I felt like he was the guy that was taking advantage more of this opportunity, which was clearly, this is Zion, and then a huge drop-off. Then there's RJ, who's just there because of his talent. And then there's this opening at 3, and he has jumped all over it and is 3 on a lot of boards for people right now. I love the Russ thing, where you never know what you're going to get every possession. Sometimes he could tomahawk over 3 guys. Sometimes he could... I am fairly sure I watched a game where he attempted to throw a lob to himself from the 3-point line off the backboard. I'm fairly sure that's what he was trying to do. There was like 4 seconds left on the shot clock, and he turned it over anyway, so we kind of didn't see how it finished, but I think that's what he did. He is having the run right now in the past month, which is what I thought he was going to have in the tournament, where if he got in the tournament and had a good game or two, he was going to be a top 5 pick. He's already doing that right now because of how lackluster the rest of the class is. I don't think you can take a 19-year-old rookie point guard with this team. The only reason the Suns should take him in the draft, if they're up at 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever, or 2, and they believe that he is the 2nd, 3rd, 4th or whatever, the best player available, that's when they should take him, I guess. But
they're gonna have to.
They're gonna have to
at this moment.
Right now, if they don't have a point guard up until that point. And it's a really interesting dynamic because draft before free agency. So if you're up at 3 and RJ Barrett holds his spot as number 2 guy, Zion obviously is going to go number 1 to anyone. Stop worrying about Ja Morant going 1, even if the Suns are there. The Suns are... No one is... The whole Luka Ayton thing has got people all cloudy on the Suns. It's very clear. Zion is a super-duper megastar.
He looks skinnier, by the way, off topic.
A little bit. Okay. A little bit.
Not just me.
Go on my Twitter. This is a plug, I guess, but go on my Twitter and watch the highlights I posted from the Notre Dame game on Monday. That was the Zion game. If you weren't sure about Zion as the number 1 guy in this class, or weren't sure about him being one of the best prospects we've seen in the past decade, 2 decades, whatever, I don't know what's wrong with you, but if you can watch that game now and see why. Because he had some just 5 or 6 plays what I've never seen before. He caught a layup that was at the top of the backboard square. He caught it. And then he fell because he was so out of control flying through the air, because humans don't fly through the air like that. So Morant at 3, if you're up at three and you're like, ah, D'Angelo Russell, Ricky Rubio, Terry Rozier, is Drew available on the trade market?
Get back to having the point guard problem that you had before, yeah.
Yeah, do you take him anyway? Oof, that would be a really tough spot, and why I would really prefer for them to get a point guard now, because I do not want to see them be put in that position. But I think it's also easy to say, oh, you just take Morant, and if you get the point guard anyway in free agency, then you trade Morant, or you bring him off the bench and trade Melton, or whatever. It's a lot easier to say that. I don't know. Do you have any sort of hope in that situation where they take him and have him be the starting point guard going into next season? Is there any way to be optimistic about that?
It's like what we said about Lonzo minus point guarding. Like, he's carrying Murray State on his back. I'm not sure he's the right fit, not necessarily for the Suns, but just for the Suns' situation where you need guy to be steady, not guy who's going to try to fix a problem by trying to throw the ball off the backboard from the three-point arc and dunk it. Like, you know, I could be wrong. I haven't watched him that much either, but he's definitely like one of those, kind of like Ayton. Like, it's a project, and whether he does well in the NBA off the bat or not, like, we already have talked about it a million times. This team is not really in position to try to grow him while it's still trying to grow Devin and DeAndre and Josh. So
he's so explosive, dynamic, and talented that there's a...
You can't pass on him, though, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's that low, but there's a 10-15% chance, maybe it's too high, that he comes in as a rookie and is just it right away. Not saying he's an all-star or a good player right away, but he immediately translates. And I think that's the other 85%. I don't think he immediately translates right away, and I think he takes a while. This was Dennis Smith to some extent, and it's been a long road for him in Dallas to kind of figure out who he is so far. And I had a second to think about it, and I actually think what's happening with Morant right now is what happened with Ayton locally here. The national train of media has really picked up Morant the past couple of weeks. He's on SportsCenter every time you turn it on. I went on his ESPN page right now, and there's like video interviews with him and specials. Like, Mike Schmitz did a video on him the other week. He's really, really picking up steam right now, and I think it's going to be interesting to see how far that goes. People are thinking it's going to be a Zion versus Morant thing. That's not going to happen. But could he be the number two pick in this draft? I actually think there's a pretty decent chance he could be. He's averaging 24-10-6 right now, or 6-10 right now. It's pretty ridiculous no matter where you're playing basketball, college basketball. But he is, I don't think he is a guy we should end it by with the trade stuff and say he is not a guy I'm worrying about with protections. Zion is the only guy I'm worrying about. If I'm putting protections on a pick, Zion is the only guy where I'm making sure that I don't miss Zion.
I said this to somebody who I cannot remember right now, but him blowing up right now actually helps. Oh, I said it to you probably. Him, Ja Morant blowing up right now helps the Suns at the very least, because that, if they don't get number one overall, that pick is going to have a little more value now. Because like we've said, this draft is not really looking strong atop after Zion. So
what if him and RJ are in their own tier kind of there, and that's the consensus, and the Suns are up at two, and the Pelicans don't have Anthony Davis anymore. They're sitting there with Drew Holiday, and you just say, here, you can have Ja Morant or RJ Barrett. Give us Drew.
Or work out a three-way. Here's a pick. If they still have Anthony Davis right now, give us Lonzo. Lonzo doesn't have to go there. You get your point guard. Yeah.
There's a lot of different ways for it to spin. And I think maybe that's, I don't know. I don't think they're thinking that far in terms of, should we hold the pick now? Should we hold it? I don't even think they're thinking that far, because they don't have a real GM yet. They still have two guys who are co-interim general managers. We're just going to say it every episode now. It's been like three episodes in a row, because I think we just need to say it.
Yeah.
Is anyone watching that Jackson Hayes kid out of Texas, the center? I know we don't need centers, but is anyone watching that kid? I don't think so.
No.
We'll find out. We're just going to keep saying this until we get an email from someone where it's like,
to tell us to stop.
Hey, we do have this and that. But for now, we don't know because you're not telling us. All right, we're going to end the episode there. We're on iTunes. We're on all your other podcast services such as Spotify. Subscribe there. Leave us a review if you'd like. say whatever you want to say. I'm not going to make you say nice things if you don't want to say nice things. We value honesty here on the Empire of the Suns podcast, as you can tell by our liquid hot Sun Steaks. Next week, we're closer to the trade deadline, and it might actually be right before the trade deadline when we podcast next week. I'm trying to think, it's the 29th today, so the trade, we could do a post.
We could do a pre and a post if we get excited over something.
Obviously, if anything happens involving the Suns and they make a deal with a point guard or make a deal in general that's worth having a podcast about, we will, everyone makes fun of these, but we will have our breaking post-reaction, post-trade podcast within 24 to 36 hours. We work fast over here. All right, everyone, have a good rest of your week. Kevin, I hope you have a good rest of your week, too. We'll see you next time, everyone.
Take a long shower.